Good afternoon, everyone. Wasn't that great? I mean, that's amazing. It's one thing to hear special music, but to hear special music then from someone who's visiting, that's really extra special. I've been following Rodney for quite a while now. But I just remember over the years how much he is advanced in his flute playing, and it's awesome to see that as people grow. So just wanted to say that, just very much appreciated it, and I'm sure everyone else did as well. Before I get started here, I just want to mention or comment on the Niagara Falls sermonette. When I was courting my wife, she was from the Buffalo area, and apparently she'd been there a lot, you know, and when I had mentioned, you know, I think I'd really like to see that, you know what she said to me? Oh, it's probably better on YouTube. So I never got to see it. So I can only imagine, you know, what it's like, but anyway, I'm going to ask you a question. Now, this is a serious question, and I want you to listen very carefully because there's a chance you may not fully understand what I'm asking. Here's the question. Who will be the most likely person among us to make it into the kingdom? It's quite a question, isn't it? Who will be the most unlikely person among us to make it into the kingdom of God? Well, it's a little bit of a trick question. Here's the answer. We all will be the most unlikely person to make it into the kingdom. And you know how I know that? Turn to Romans 3. Here's how I know we are all going to be the most unlikely person to make it into the kingdom of God. Romans 3, at the end of verse 9, it says, we're all under sin. Now, look what this says. As it is written, verse 10, there is none righteous, no, not one. There's none that understands, none that seek after God. They've all gone out of the way, and they've altogether become unprofitable. There's none that does good, no, not one. So, it's safe to say we all will be the most unlikely person to make it into the kingdom. Because look at where we came from. And I know that there are people out there who believe that they found their way to God. And we know that's not how it works. Unless God changes something, then we get to understand and know who God is. Okay, it talks, Isaiah 25, turn to Isaiah 25. Isaiah 25 talks about a veil. Just take a look at this. This will help us understand where I'm going. You just don't sometimes realize and maybe not appreciate the miracle that it was for God to do what He's done with us and that we can actually understand His Word. But look at this, what it's called, this veil. And we'll start in verse 6. And in this mountain shall the Lord of hosts, now we're talking future, okay? In this mountain shall the Lord of hosts make unto all people a feast of fat things, a feast of wines on the lees, fat things full of marrow, wines on the lees well refined, and he will destroy in this mountain the face of the covering cast over all people, in the veil that is spread over all nations. At that time, he's going to take away this veil, this covering that was cast over all people. Now, we just happen to be the ones, you know, us and those who have preceded us, who that veil has been taken off of us. Okay? We cannot understand the things of God until that covering is taken away. And again, it's a miracle that God does that in our minds. It's hard to understand how that works, but, you know, we're just not there yet. But turn to Luke 24, because these things, these simple things, what we consider simple things, they have to be revealed. Look what Jesus Christ said at the end of Luke, Luke 24. And it's, well, he didn't say this, but it's recorded. But it's really an interesting statement thrown in at the end of the book of Luke. Look at verse 45. Luke 24 in verse 45, after he was resurrected, and he's talking to his disciples, and look, it says, then he opened their understanding that they might understand the scriptures. That's it. And it goes on. And that's an extraordinary verse, because there was a miracle involved in opening up our minds to understand. Okay, again, how does that tie in with what I just asked? Well, I'll show you how this ties in. Because what we're going to talk about today, and first I'm going to tell you why I'm going to talk about something, and then I'm going to tell you exactly what it is. But from time to time, when talking with people, and sometimes something comes out, and we all do it, but it's a little bit, I don't even know how to describe it. But something comes out that says, you know what, I don't really belong, I don't deserve this, I don't. Yeah, you ever heard that before? I know I've heard some of us say that. I've said that over the course of years. I don't get it. Why is God performing that miracle, taking that veil away, so that I can understand his word and my neighbor and, you know, everyone. No, I shouldn't say my neighbor. Both sides of me. Back before I lived amongst the brethren. But why isn't that person, why didn't they get that miracle where they can understand these simple, basic truths of God? So what I'm going to talk about today, again, considering what I asked to start, is this simple truth that God can do anything with anyone at any time. And I think not all of us believe that. And let me tell you a little story that happened, oh, this is many years ago, and it's happened multiple times since, but this is the first time it happened, back when I was in the Chicago congregation, and I met a man who was in special forces in the military, and he was trained to kill people, enemies. Okay, he just didn't go around knocking off 7-Elevens. Get it. He was a trained killer for our military. And the one thing, he had a hard time letting go, because here he is now in God's church, and he had a hard time letting go of the fact that he was paid to kill people. And he couldn't let that go. So we're going to talk a lot about the people that God uses. You're going to be surprised. You'll probably some come to mind right now. How in the world, God, can you use that person based on who they were? And not only that, not about people who may have you know, bad pasts per se because of their whatever it is that they were into, but also people now in the present who deal with physical limitations or mental limitations or whatever that make them question, why do I get to be a part of this group, this exclusive group who's getting exclusive training to do an exclusive job in the coming government of God? I want to address it because, again, we're going to see we cannot fall into that type of thinking. We'll never want to fall into that type of thinking. And it doesn't matter how bad our pasts are. And it doesn't matter how dire or bad our current physical circumstances are, our limitations. When I say that, I mean, you know, we may be getting older, more immobile. We may have diseases. We may have disabilities, handicaps. And this little concept will tend to creep into our minds if we're not careful. Yes, we are all the most likely people to make it into the kingdom. But you might look at it like this. And it's all over this book. God chooses the misfits of the world. So what? That no one can brag once they get there. Okay? But this is an important thing to recognize. And I'm gonna give you a bunch of different examples. And we're gonna look at God's pattern to use people in very difficult present circumstances, and he's picked people. We know it's from the beginning of the foundation of the world, but he chooses people who have been horrible in their past lives. And maybe we can relate to that. Oh, I'm sure we can. I certainly can. We even talks about, God says that we were enemies. Back before that veil was taken off, Romans 5:10 says that. We were enemies of God. And we've seen, again, and there's plenty of places out there that says all of us human beings, pretty much we're just hanging on by a thread. But you know what? I still need a group of people to do something very important coming up here soon. So anyway, let's just consider, and some of these are very obvious, but then we're going to look at some that aren't so obvious, that God can use or do anything through anyone at any time that he wants. And some of these examples will show that. Now, consider the disciples. Just ordinary men, right? Fishermen, tax collectors, no one special per se. But it didn't matter because God decided that's who he wanted to use. Take a look at, this is wild. Turn to Acts 9. I talked about a man in the special forces who was trained and paid to kill. You know where we're going here? We're going to look at a murderer that God chose to then be in the church. A murderer. Okay? Let's go to Acts 9 and start in verse 1. Acts 9, verse 1. Saul, yet breathing out threatenings and slaughter against the disciples of the Lord, went unto the high priest and desired of him letters to Damascus to the synagogues, that if he were found any of this way, the very way that we're living and practicing, whether they were men or women, he might bring them bound unto Jerusalem. And if you look at, just go ahead and turn to Acts 22. So what did he do? Acts 22 and verse 4. Paul said, I persecuted this way unto death, binding and delivering in the prisons both men and women. God, do you know what you're doing here? Could you imagine a family member of someone Paul killed or even arrested? Saul at the time, fair. Oh, going to the temple this week. I wonder who's speaking. I don't know if that's how they talked like that. Oh, Saul. I don't know if his name was changed before he started preaching, but let's just say, okay, Paul's preaching. Paul, he killed my parents. Do you think, now, when we read about Paul and the wonderful things he did, and wow, what a great servant, and rightfully so, he falls into that group, as do we, okay? How do you reconcile in your mind that you're going to the temple and you're going to hear this man preached who sometime in the past killed your parents and he arrested, a couple of brothers and sisters? How can God, it's almost like you might think if you're not careful that God is like mocking us. Yeah, let this guy preach about me. Let him teach about me. That, brethren, this is an extraordinary example that God can do anything through anyone at any time. All right? You know the story about Moses? We don't have to go there. This is a man who, in Exodus 4, you know the story where God, is telling him, I need you to do some things. Oh, no, I'm not eloquent. I'm not an eloquent speaker. All right, that was the least of his problems. That was a physical limitation. But that was a man who lacked confidence and was fearful. And God used that man, as you know, in a great way. God can use anyone to do anything at any time. David's the same way. You know how that started. He was a shepherd. He was a young shepherd boy. The youngest of his brothers, he wasn't very, much to look at. And yet God chose him to lead the nation of Israel. Now, there's a lot of examples here. What about Gideon? Let's look at Gideon. Turn back to Judges 6. And God says, my ways are not your ways, and my thoughts are not your thoughts. It's like, yeah, no kidding. Because none of this makes sense to take the worst of the worst of the worst, people who have these various checkered pasts and even current limitations, and yet utilizing them in great and wonderful ways. But Judges 6, verse 11, I'll just read a little here. There came an angel of the Lord, Jesus Christ, sat under an oak, which was in Ophrah, and that pertained unto Joash, the Abiezrite, and his son Gideon, threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him, the Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. And yet, he's saying, if you drop down to verse 15, I'm the least in my father's house. My family's poor. Isn't there someone else that you might want to choose for this task, God? God knows what he's doing, right? I mean, this is common sense to us Christians, but that's what I'm saying. We got to be very careful that we don't accuse God of not knowing what he's doing. And that not only applies to how we think about ourselves, but about other people as well. Wow, I can't believe that that person is doing that. Or that person over there. She's a woman. Really? God? You know, do you realize she's a woman? This is a dangerous, slippery slope. Think of Mary Magdalene, we're speaking of women. A certain woman who had been healed of evil spirits and infirmities. Evil spirits and infirmities. And yet, she's clearly documented in this book. First to see Christ when he rose. She served Christ. We know that as well as other women. How about Rahab? Ah, prostitute. God. This woman has no respect for herself. How is that you're going to use her? Even became she was an ancestor of Jesus Christ. Who, speaking of Jesus Christ, you know what he went through, right? But why did God set it up that he was born illegitimately? I mean, with everything that he had to go through, couldn't he just have a normal birth? John 8:41 is where they actually called him, oh, you were born of fornication. Really? Did he really need to have that as well? You see, all of us can be used by God, any one of us, for anything at any time. And if we have that same attitude as that special forces guy, and I've met several over the course of my time in God's church, same story, where for whatever reason, you know, I wouldn't, if you're one of those, I don't know if you necessarily should say those things, but there's people like that, and that's an extreme example, that what they've done in their past is causing them not to go forward in such a way as God would want them to. And that's what we have to beware of. How many of us are carrying around things that either are from our horrible pasts or not going at the speed wants us to go by because of current physical limitations? It's a problem. Now, let's look. Now, all these people that I mentioned here, we're all very familiar with, right? Let's look at an example of probably a small group of men. I'm sure once we go there, it'll jog your memory. But let's look at four men who really were responsible for saving the entire nation of Israel. And these fellas couldn't be more low in their circumstances than they were. That's a clue. you're already picking this up, but turn to 2 Kings chapter 7. At the time of when this happened, which we'll go into, there was this great famine in the land. Now, consider, a great famine means what? There's just no food, because the circumstances surrounding, it was out of anyone's control, right? God controls the weather. So you've got an entire land that is under great famine, and then the king of Syria goes to attack the town of Samaria, which was the capital of the northern kingdom. But let's look in chapter 7. This was the time during Elisha. And let's start reading in verse 3. Let's learn about these four extraordinary fellas who couldn't have been in a worse situation. All right? Verse 3. And there were four leprous men at the entering of the gate. They couldn't even come inside the gate because they had leprosy. They had to stay out until they were cleansed or healed, or however that worked. I'm not sure how exactly. But they couldn't even be in the town. Four men with leprosy. I've never had leprosy. I don't know anyone who ever has. I would have to imagine it's pretty bad. So they said to one another, "Why do we sit here until we die? If we say we'll enter into the city, then the famine is in the city and we'll die there. And if we sit here and do nothing," I'm adding that, "we'll die also." So they had nothing going for them. They had leprosy. They were outside the city, whatever that meant. And they had no control over the fact that there was no food. That was the two options. Stay here outside the city by the gate and do nothing, or go into the city. Both options they'd ultimately die. Or here's the second option now. "Now therefore come, let us fall into the host of the Syrians." Oh yeah, that's a good option. Let's surrender to the enemy. Now one of two things are going to happen. Let's find out. "Let us fall into the host of the Syrians. If they save us alive, if they have mercy on us, well, we'll live." May not be the greatest standard of living ever, but at least we won't die, finishing off. "And if they kill us, we'll die." So you got two options here for these four fellas who had nothing going for them in their personal lives, and in their beyond their personal lives, their standard of living was nil because there was a great famine in the land. Do you see? Okay. Now, what would God Almighty, why would He want to use these men, which He did? You know the story. We're going to go through it. Four lepers? Really? He couldn't pick someone from the city, like a couple elders? Someone in the military at that time? Are you starting to see God's pattern here? He's picking the misfits to do great things for Him. Verse 5, "They rose up in the twilight to go unto the camp of the Syrians. And when they were come to the uttermost part of the camp of Syria, behold," "there was no man there." How is that possible? Just chance? "For the Lord had made the host of the Syrians to hear a noise of chariots and a noise of horses, even the noise of a great host." And they said one to another, Lo, the king of Israel has hired against us the kings of the Hittites and the kings of the Egyptians to come upon us. So God created a situation where scared off this army, this strong army. It's a miracle. And then the following happens. Verse 7, Wherefore they arose and fled in the twilight, left their tents, horses, asses, even the camp as it was, and fled for their life. And when these lepers came to the uttermost part of the camp, they went into one tent and did eat and drink and carried silver, gold, raiment, and went and hid it. They couldn't believe it. It's like, wow, what a great stroke of luck. And they said one to another, verse 9, uh-oh, you know what? We don't do well. This day is a day of good tidings, and we hold our peace. If we tarry until the morning light, some mischief will come upon us. Now therefore come, that we may go and tell the king's household. So they went ahead, they told the king, and then all of a sudden, there was food during an impossible situation called the famine. Now, could God have used some more respectable people instead of four lepers? Could God have used someone other than a murderer to be a high-ranking apostle in his church? Could God have used someone other than Gideon, whose family was poor and he was the youngest? As we go through this, couldn't God have used others? Why did he use misfits? Why did he use people who had nothing going for them? It's because God can do anything through anyone at any time. And that, again, is our focus today. Because I don't want anyone, anywhere in God's church, to carry the weight from that story I told you, that they're not good enough, or they've created some type of horrific past, and they have to question on and on, why do I get the shot? Why am I here? God, do you know what you're doing? That's not what or who we are, okay? You can go and look at Judges 4. You know who Jael was? You know the story of Deborah? And, well, go to Judges 4. This is actually, just quickly, I mean, this is something we can look at. Deborah was the prophetess at that time. And Barak was supposed to be a leader. Let's see. During this period, Israel was suffering for 20 years. So God sent Deborah. But in verse 6, she sent and called Barak. And if toward the end of the verse, go and draw toward Mount Tabor, take with you 10,000 men, so forth. And I'll draw unto you to the river Kishon Sisera, who is the general of the army of the enemy at that time. And I'll deliver him into your hand. God is telling me, I mean, I'm going to tee this guy up. I'm going to give him right to you. All you need to go is just go, Barak. Just go. And I am going to deliver him into your hand. Well, you know the story, verse 8, Barak said unto her, If you will go with me, Deborah, then I'll go. But, you know, if you don't go with me, then I'm not going to go. For some reason, Deborah was, some comfort to him. He didn't have it within himself to just go and do this. Then verse 9, she said, Well, I will surely go with you, but the journey that you take shall not be for your honor, for the Lord shall sell Sisera into the hand of a woman. the woman whose hand that, you know, Sisera fell to was Jael, if I'm pronouncing that right. I think in the Hebrew or in the language of the time it's Chael, but I am no Mr. Habush. So, in verse 18, let's just look at this. Again, very inspiring. Jael, who's really, she's a somebody, don't take this wrong, but who's Jael? We don't know anything about this woman. She went out to meet Sisera, said to him, "Turn in, my lord, turn into me, fear not." When he had turned into under her into the tent, she covered him with a mantle. "Give me, I pray you, a little water. I'm thirsty." She opened some milk, gave him the drink. Verse 20, again he said unto her, "Stand in the door of the tent. And it shall be when any man does come to inquire of you and say, 'Is there any man here?' You shall say, 'No.'" Now, understand that God already, as it says in verse 15, discomfited his army, means to defeat utterly. Verse 21, Jael, Heber's wife, took a nail of the tent, took a hammer in her hand, went softly unto him, smote the nail into his temples, fastened it into the ground, for he was fast asleep, weary, and he died. Why did God use Jael? Couldn't he have used one of the military men? I mean, it would have been a great story, right? He walked in there. There was sweat going down. You know, camouflage on his face. This woman picked up a tent. Bam, you're finished. God can use anyone and do anything at any time. Any of us. Whatever God has planned, He can use us. Now, there's qualifiers. Of course, there's always qualifiers. But the book is full of misfits, horrible pasts, or very difficult present circumstances. Does that sound like any one of us? Yeah. We've, again, without going into it, all right, hey, let's spotlight. Jane Doe, let's see your problems. No. We've all have issues from our past. And we all have some type of physical limitations of our present. But if we allow God to work through us and we don't have this horrific spiritual, emotional, or mental baggage that we have to carry around, "Oh, I'm sorry, God, I can't do that. I mean, it's a little scary, but, you know, I got to carry this baggage and I just can't keep up, and just do someone else, you know, get someone else to do this work." That's a slap in the face. Has God ever made a mistake? Ever? Let's just look at a couple things. You can note these down. The question is, has God ever made a mistake in choosing any one of us? Has He? Deuteronomy 32:4, chapter 32 and verse 4 says, "He is the rock. His work is perfect." His work is choosing us and training us and giving us work to do. Psalm 18, verse 30 says, "His way is perfect." He doesn't make mistakes. We got to make sure we're not treating Him as if He does. 2 Chronicles 33, the story about evil King Manasseh. Remember that one? This guy, he even went to the point of sacrificing his own children, set up idols. Just a horrible guy. Caused his people to sin. So God says, "All right." He gets captured by the enemy. He recognizes, wow, this is wrong. Repents. God restores back his kingdom. And he starts going and changing some of the things that he did. God can use anyone. for any reason to do anything at any time, will we believe it? We better. I sometimes wonder and think, how much more, I ask this about myself, how much more could I be doing if I wasn't caught up, carrying my old baggage? From time to time, that happens. What about all of us? Are we holding on to something that was from our past, or allowing something in our present to slow us down, to be fearful, to not follow through with God, what He's trying to give us to do? If it is, we really need to take an inventory and make sure that doesn't happen. Because there's so much I think God can do with us, but unless we're going at full speed, we could be cheating Him, we could be cheating ourselves, we could be cheating each other. So something we need to very, very carefully think about. Turn to Romans 9. I believe this happened. It's hard to keep track anymore. I believe this happened during one of my field assignments in California. And it was a woman who became very bitter. And she crossed the line because she was accusing God of not knowing what He was doing. And you're probably wondering, how in the world could that happen? Oh, trust me, that happened. She was very bitter because one thing or another didn't happen. And because of her past, which she could not get over, it always became a roadblock to her growth. And having to deal with someone like that, it's one thing if someone comes to their minister and says, I need some help. I got a little bit of a bump in my life, a little bit of an obstacle. Can you help me get over it? Can you create a plan to help me to get over it? That's one thing. But when you've got someone else who's bitter and who's lashing out at God verbally and by their actions, because of something that happened ages ago and now is carried over certain ways, certainly don't want to get into the details, that's two different types of people. Now, this person didn't last very long. She had a lot going for her, but she was always bringing up the past, always bringing up. And I guarantee you the devil couldn't be happier if that's what we do. Because remember, we come from some place that God says, no one seeks me, no one understands me, no one obeys me, no one. All right, well, that's fine. That's what we were there, but we came out of that. Now it's time to cut the baggage of whatever that is. And this woman, it was hard. Hard being around her because she just was bitter. She became bitter how God made her. We could, I suppose, look at those verses. I'm the one who made you like this. And it's all for God's purpose. But anyway, Romans 9 in verse 20, we got to be careful we never cross that line that some people cross. Verse 20, just jumping into that one verse. No, O man, but who are you that replies against God? Shall the thing formed say to him that formed it, why have you made me like this? Is not the potter power over the clay in the same lump to make one vessel under honor and another under dishonor? Doesn't God have the right to allow certain things in our life? Difficult things? Doesn't he have that right? If anyone is out there who knows what he's doing, it would be God. Right? It would be God. Look at go to Isaiah 55. It's scary when you come across someone who does cross that line and who wants to accuse God and blame God for everything that's wrong in their lives. And it's sad. And sometimes you could understand, you know, I think I've mentioned this before, I've known two people back in the Worldwide Church of God who were blind since birth. And part of me is, oh, Father, you called them out of the world, they repented, they're doing everything that you're asked. Couldn't you heal them? Ooh, be careful on that line. Now, there's nothing wrong with asking God questions. And I mean, just bringing it all to him. But God, be careful it doesn't turn into an accusatory tone, because God knows what he's doing. Now, I'm going to read a new new NLT, New Living Translation. I'll start in I said, turn back to Isaiah 45. I already referenced this. Isaiah 45. I'm going to read this in the New Living Translation so you can truly understand this. Isaiah 45, and I'm going to start in verse 9. Now, you can just listen and allow this to sink in, or you can read along in whatever version you have. Verse 9. What sorrow awaits those who argue with their creator? Does a clay pot argue with its maker? Does the clay dispute with the one who shapes it, saying, stop, you're doing it wrong? Does the pot exclaim, how clumsy can you be? Can you imagine? And yet, these ears have heard these words. Verse 10, how terrible it would be if a newborn baby said to its father, why was I born? Or if it said to its mother, why did you make me this way? This is what the Lord says, the Holy One of Israel and your Creator. Do you question what I do for my children? Do you give me orders about the work of my hands? I'm the one who made the earth and created people to live on it. With my hands, I stretched out the heavens. All the stars are at my command. So be careful. God knows what he's doing. And sometimes, you know, when we talk about God can use anyone for anything at any time. I mean, a lot of the things that God is asking us to do, I mean, are wonderful and pleasant and happy and fun, right? I'm talking about the times where God asks us to do something that's difficult or allows physical circumstances to be difficult and doesn't change them. Then what? Then do we go through what we just heard? What are you doing? Do you know what you're doing, God? Man, that's a dangerous place to be. First Corinthians 2:16 says, for who has known the mind of the Lord that he may instruct him? Who are any of us to question God in this way? I know, Father, that you use the misfits to do your work, and I know it's for a purpose so no one can glory when we start to look back someday. But are you sure? Are you sure this is the right thing? Do you see? I hope we can see how dangerous this can be. God doesn't really, he's not excited about when people push back. We skipped it earlier, but turn back to Exodus 4. Look at, just because we're talking about it, Moses' reaction and his excuses and what God's reaction was. It wasn't good. God tells him earlier, you're going to deliver Israel. You're going to go to Pharaoh. You're going to lay some things out. He's not going to listen. But you're the person I'm going to use to do something wonderful and great and mighty. Verse 10. Moses said unto the Lord, Oh my Lord, I'm not eloquent, neither heretofore nor since you have spoken unto your servant. I'm slow of speech. I'm a slow tongue. And the Lord said to him, Okay, who has made man's mouth? Or who makes the dumb or deaf or seeing or the blind? Haven't I? Haven't I? And this really is a stunning verse. Isn't God about, you know, being healthy and prosperous and, hey, I made the dumb and the deaf and the seeing or for the blind. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And you may not understand this, but I got this. Okay? Now verse 12. Now go and I'll be with your mouth and teach you what to say. And verse 13. And he said, Oh my Lord, send, I pray you, by the hand of him who will be sent. And guess what? How does God react when we push back? Now, yeah, we'll take all the good stuff, God. Yeah, I'll do that job. Oh, man, I like that job. But this job? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and it'll be kindled against us. Now, we understand God is very slow to anger, long-suffering with us. He gets it. We're physical. But at a certain point, he needs for us to move and do whatever it is that he needs for us to do. Because if we don't, that can mess up other things. You ever play dominoes? Or you ever at least stack them all in a big row? It takes like 4 hours to get them all in a row. But boy, when you hit that first one, it's gone, you know, it's done in like a minute. And you can go in different directions. But there are times when God needs for us to do something because he's chosen us to do it, the misfits that we are. And if we keep making excuses and putting on the brakes, that can mess up things down the road in other areas which could be non-related. I know it's difficult. I know it's difficult to swallow that we are really limited in who we are and our abilities. I know that. Even though God gives us talents, he gives us gifts, he certainly gives us direction. But it comes down to, I think, a lot. Again, I keep thinking of the special forces guy. I keep thinking of the woman, the bitter woman. We've got to forgive ourselves. God's forgiven us. God's forgiven us for some of the worst things we can possibly imagine. How do you forgive someone who sacrifices his own children in the fire like King Manasseh did? How do you forgive someone like that? How do you forgive someone like Paul, who's killing and jailing Christians? Isn't life hard enough? as a Christian sometimes. But then you have to deal with something like that. They did. We deal with that kind of stuff in different ways. People making fun of us. Enemies speaking evil of us. Hey, that stuff's not true. Sometimes we just have to allow, forgive ourselves, because God's forgiven us, and not constantly worry about what our mistakes have been and what our limitations are now. We can't do that. We serve a God, now get ready for this. I've been waiting for this whole message to say this. We serve a God of endless second chances. Yeah? Do you get it? You know what a second chance is? You make a mistake. Let's say your employer. You do something, you make a mistake worth being fired. And he says, no, that's okay. Just do better the next time. Oh, second chance. Well, brethren, we serve a God of endless second chances. I think I have a few minutes to tell you something. I may have told this story before, but it fits so perfectly. When I was working at an insurance company downtown Chicago, they determined that they were going to move us out to the suburbs. They wanted their own building. And maybe some of you remember I said this before. But there was a lot of people like me that were not going to be able to get out to where the new building was going to go. At the time, it was great. Drove like 2 miles to the train station, hopped on the train, just drove into Chicago. Not a worry in the world. I could sleep. I can read. I can do whatever. But I had a junker of a car at that time. Just starting out, a few years after college, this stupid car. Something went wrong every other week, and it cost a lot of money anyway. You hear about, you know, we can talk about that later. But they offered a van pool. For those people who were going to have a difficult time to get out to the western suburbs, okay, you can sign up to be in a van pool, and they were going to provide the vans. Oh, that sounds great. I would love to be able to be a driver of that, because then you got to keep the van as a personal vehicle. It's like, oh, man, do I want old junker here or this nice, shiny white, white van? But they picked a woman. I thought they figured she was more responsible. I can't imagine that, but but she actually turned it down because she didn't want the responsibility. You know, it was a long drive to where we were, because she'd have to pick up everybody, and then anyway. So I started driving, and it's probably over a year. Man, I know I told you this. 8 women in the van. Oh, man. And me. If you ever felt sorry for anybody. But in the explicit rule was no one else can drive that van except the person who it was given to. Now, it was an insurance company, and they're pretty strict on rules. Wouldn't you know, The one time I allowed someone else to drive that van, they totaled it. It serves me right? Well, the reason I allowed this person to drive the van was because I was sicker than a dog. It was a holy day. And there was a picnic between services. They didn't go to restaurants. They went to picnics. And so I allowed this person to take this van and to drive the food, which I had promised to bring. But I was sicker than a dog. I had the flu. So then, you know, I get a call just a couple minutes after I loaded the van. Hi. We got a problem. Why do we have a problem? Well, I smashed the van. You smashed the van? Yeah, it's totaled. Oh, are you serious? It wasn't real until I went. I was fairly close, less than a mile away. I went to look, and I literally, and I'm not kidding, I came up to the van, and this thing was crunched, and my knees started to get wobbly because I was going to pass out. I was already sick. I'm like, you know, you get the drive heaves, and it was a terrible moment. So what I had to do then, because that was on a Sunday, it had to have been Pentecost, I guess, I had to then go get another ride, first of all, home. It was a mess. I had to tell all eight women, you guys have to find another ride into work. Why? I'll just tell you about it later. Okay? The whole night before that, because then I was going to go to the branch manager, and I knew I was going to get fired. I go into see the branch manager after not sleeping one wink of sleep, sweating. I had the flu, just horrible feeling. So I walk into the office, didn't even go to my desk, and I go to his office, and in front of his office was a secretary. So, and I knew her. So I go and sit down. I'm feeble. I'm sweating. I'm just knowing that I'm going to lose my job. She looks at me and goes, "What's wrong?" I smashed the van. What? I smashed the van and I got to talk to Mr. So-and-so. She says, "Come on." She grabs me. She brings me to the man who was over the van pool, which I don't know why I didn't go there. I just thought, I got to go to the top, take my beatings, get fired, and get out of there. But she took me to the van. His name was George. You know what George said after I was able to get it out? So, okay. Did you hear what I said, George? Yeah. Accidents happen. We're an insurance company. We got this. This can't be. I deserve to be fired, George. Someone fire me, regardless. Second chance. Do you see how valuable that can be, a second chance, when someone has the mercy to give you a second chance? Our God, now going back to the main point here, our God is the God of endless second chances. Let's just look at a couple verses that show that, to give you, hopefully to inspire you to understand that it doesn't matter who you are and what you've been through. God's got a great future for all of us, but we got to stop beating ourselves up and carrying that spiritual weight that is nothing but destructive. Turn to Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55. You know, because of who God is, He doesn't expect a lot in terms of quantity. He expects a lot because, of, think about it, to take that veil off and to perform that miracle and for us to understand who He is and what He wants us to be and His laws and all that stuff, that's pretty a heavy thing. So he does require some heavy things, but it's not a lot of things. Let's just look at a few things we've got to do so that we can constantly have that second chance. And we can move forward and understand the concept that God can do anything through anyone at any time. Okay? I want us all to be able to accept that. Isaiah 55 and verse 7. Let the wicked forsake his way, and let the unrighteous man forsake his thoughts, and let him return unto the Lord, and he'll have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. Forsake the way. And in this case, because of the context, forsake your past. Let it go. Yeah, but, and no one in here. I don't think any, I know no one in here has murdered Christians. No one. So right off the bat, we are not the worst there's ever been. And yet sometimes we can't let it go and we want to make everyone think that they're the worst that there's ever been. If you need pity, come and get a hug or something. Don't keep vomiting out your garbage past. No one cares. You know why? Because they have their own garbage past. And it's hard enough to get over that when everyone constantly talking about it and bringing it up. And forget about the fact that you're limited, whether physically or mentally, emotionally, or even spiritually. Oh, I don't know the Bible as well as I should. You know, I'm one of the biggest proponents of just understand the principles of God and do them. So what if you have to use a phone constantly to look up a verse because you can't memorize it? Who cares? There's a lot of stuff that's holding us back if we're going to be honest with ourselves. Sometimes it's really hard to understand this concept that God can use anyone for anything at any time. Believe it. Okay? Let's look at another one. Joel 2. Turn to Joel 2. Joel 2 and verse 13. Joel 2 and verse 13. This is really interesting. Won't go into the context. We're just looking at how God is the God of endless second chances. Rend your heart, not your garments. You know, in the past, in the old days, they would throw dust on their head and rent their garments, tear their garments. God's saying, what? Rend your heart. I don't know the history of where that came from, tearing your clothes. Oh, I'm so horrible. Or I'm mourning. I'm tearing my clothes. Tear your heart if it needs tearing. Not your garments. And turn unto the Lord your God. He's gracious and merciful and slow to anger and of great kindness. And look at this. And repents him of the evil. Do you know what that means in normal language? It means he's eager to change his mind when he's set to punish somebody. That's who we serve. He's not the one who wants to keep beating us up because of the things that we've done in our past. We won't go there, but Jonah 3:10 says, "And God saw their works, and they turned from their evil way, and God repented of the evil." In other words, he changed his mind about what he was going to do. That he said that he would do unto them, and he did not. God's... Oh, man, the devil has really painted the picture of our Father as some mean old man with a cane waiting to whap us constantly. You did this 50 years ago? Have I beaten you lately for that? And yet the devil wants us to constantly think that because he's constantly bringing these things to mind, and it gets us, it could depress us. It could destroy us if we're not careful. Don't let that happen. God can do anything through any one of us at any time. So let him. Good and bad. Everything has a purpose, good and bad. 2 Chronicles, we don't have the time, but let me just, I'll read some of these. Second Chronicles 7 and verse 14 says, if my people who are called by my name, for us today, that's Christians, if they humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I'll hear them from heaven, and I'll forgive their sin, and I'll heal their land. He will hear, he will forgive, and he will heal. Do we believe that? Or do we want to believe in the mean old God who's going to beat us for something we did when we were, you know, teenagers or young adults, as horrible as it could have been? I can tell you, just based on the things we're reading, you know what God would say if he was standing right here? About your past ugly self? So what? That was back then. What are you doing for me lately? Ezekiel 33 verse 11 says, say unto them, as I live, says the Lord God, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked. Let the wicked turn from his way and live. Turn you from your evil ways. He wants all of us, especially those first fruits, we're the first fruits of his Spirit. We're the first fruits of having that veil taken off, so we can understand who and what he is. He wants us to be there. But unfortunately, bitter woman and potentially special forces guy, I don't know what happened to him, if that ate him up. But I know bitter woman, what she was going through, that ate her up. God doesn't want that. He doesn't want that from any of us. And I don't care how bad and horrible your past is. And I don't care how limited because of age or handicapped or whatever is what you're dealing with now, in other words, called the cross, that God said, pick it up and follow me. I don't care. Let's go. Yeah, but I'd like to be healed or I'd like it to change. Well, I'm not ready to do that. I need you to do some other things. And then if the time is right or the purpose is right, then I'll heal you. But we're not here. Yes, God wants us to be healthy and happy and fine. But some of us have to go through other certain types of burdens and trials and tests for the good of our long-term investment. And that's just how it is. Luke 15 and verse 20. Boy, it was from a parable, but the prodigal son, you're very familiar with that. He arose and came to his father. It's a parable, but you understand what this is saying. And when he was yet a great way off, just the fact that the father saw that he was coming back, he saw him, he had compassion, ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And that's how our Father is waiting to do for us. If we're lost, swimming in this sea of self-pity and beating ourselves up because of what our past is or whatever our physical limitations are now. He's waiting for us. Just as we wrap up here, just I want you to remember something. Remember that God is the God of endless second chances. He is. And he's forgiven us of all that stuff in the past. Don't keep reliving it. Don't keep allowing it to weigh you down and to stop you from moving forward and accomplish things and blossom before him. Remember that forgiveness. Remember those second chances you get each and every day, probably multiple times a day. God does not discriminate based on our past mistakes and weaknesses. He doesn't do it. He's not like that. He works through misfits. And we're them and accept it. Someday we're not going to be misfits. But right now we are. And we have to keep struggling to get rid of that junk that's attached to us. So, remember those three words. God can work through anyone for anything at any time. Brethren, believe it.